Oh, I hope you're ready, Nashville, because we are off and rolling today here on Calvin and Campbell, the inaugural edition of the show. I'm Calvin Smith. To my right is Elijah Campbell. On the board is Captain Kurt. This is Calvin and Campbell on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You've heard us on the kickoff. You've heard us doing Titans pre- and post-game shows, NFL talk on Sundays. But we're here on a Saturday rocking and rolling with you to talk everything about the sports world on our show, Calvin and Campbell.
History is being made today. This is history. Same knuckleheads that brought you the NFL kickoff are now bringing you Calvin and Campbell, live here from the Game Nashville Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.
Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Don't forget, you can hear us all around the world streaming on the Game Nashville app. And Elijah, we're going to kick off the show with the first thing, the thing that kind of, I think, in Nashville was a big headline for a minute.
For a hot minute.
Tom Brady. Touring NBA with Gisele Bündchen.
Photoshopped photos. Everywhere, and people bought it.
And then the counter reports that this isn't true. Whoa, 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 whoa. Calm down. Tom Brady, Gisele Bündchen, they aren't here. They're actually in Miami right now. Tom Brady is not in Nashville, although that didn't quell any of the rumors circling around anywhere this entire week that Tom Brady may be out in New England and that they could need a new destination or something. Phillip Rivers in L.A. is gone. All this stuff about Tom Brady in Nashville is completely swirling in full effect. Meanwhile, the Titans have a quarterback on their roster who was very good in Ryan Tannehill this year.
Yeah. What amazes me about this entire thing is just how fast it spread. Like, someone tweets, oh, I heard that, or someone has told me that Tom Brady
my
is touring.
My super secret
NBA.
Insider sources.
My brother's cousin's co-worker's best friend's nephew told me that Tom Brady is touring NBA with his son. And Gisele Bündchen is looking for homes in Nashville. Like, it's amazing how fast that spread and how quickly this became a thing. Like, this is something that had to be addressed by NBA and had to be, like, Teddy Bruschi addressed it in a tweet. Like, it got the attention of Teddy Bruschi. Like, that's hilarious to me, is how fast that rumor started and how quickly other people had to tone it down or to completely dismiss it.
Well, that's just the power of Tom Brady's name, right? I mean, that's how...
Yeah.
I'm not gonna go down this road because I think it could be easy to say that's how starved you get for a headline at some point once mm-hmm. the Titans season ends and you kind of start to enter the off season of sports in an NFL college football driven market. But really, that's just the power of Tom Brady. I mean, you're talking about the greatest quarterback of all time. And it's, I mean, I don't know. I don't know the possibility of Tom Brady coming to Nashville. I'm not going to say, like, oh, it's not happening or it is happening. But this is a better chance than anybody's ever had at him leaving New England. So, of course, it's going to be in headline. It's just...
Tom Brady doesn't do a very good job of squashing it either because he then tweeted that very cryptic tweet yes. where it's just a picture. And people who tweet just pictures with no captions, no nothing.
That's what Instagram is for, Tom.
Yeah. Yes, that is exactly what Instagram is for. B, he knows exactly what he's doing. He knows exactly that he's going to get people talking about this very picture that he tweeted, especially on the same day that rumors are swirling around Nashville, like obviously not true rumors, that he is touring NBA or looking for homes in Nashville. Same day he tweets that very cryptic photo. Which can have many, many interpretations. Is he going to L.A.? Is he staying? He's standing at the end of a tunnel. Is he going into the tunnel? Is he going back onto the field? Is it a metaphor for him staying in New England? We could dissect that picture for segments. And that's happening in sports talk radio and in the sports media right
it's
now.
It's happening at this very instant on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We are talking about that. Two knuckleheads are talking about it right now. And that's the power of Tom Brady. Like you said, it's the power of that brand. And you talk about... The Titans already having a really good quarterback right now. Is it worth it signing Tom Brady just for the name recognition? And because he's Tom Brady, even though he is going to be like, what, 43 next year?
Well, that's what I want to ask. Just while we're on the topic,
yeah.
Is Tom Brady a better option for the Titans next season? Because Ryan Tannehill last season, even if you get a lot of regression from him, like you're going to get
inevitable.
From Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, inevitable.
Like I just firmly believe he's not going to be the same quarterback next year. Really, under a lot of circumstances, but no matter what, because you just can't defy statistical gravity like he did in the incredible manner he did. However, will he regress far enough to be worse than Tom Brady? Because we've seen Tom Brady officially aging, officially not the same quarterback he was 2, 3, 4, certainly 5 years ago when he was an MVP quarterback.
And I understand that Tom Brady's receiving core was cheeks, as the kids would call it. It was very, very bad. It hurt Julian Edelman being your number one receiver. Benjamin Watson
dropping a pass in the most crucial moment to convert.
Doing something he just doesn't do, and that's drop passes. And then having the tight end that replaces arguably the greatest tight end of all time, in my opinion the greatest tight end of all time, Rob Gronkowski, being replaced by Benjamin Watson. Huge drop-off right there. And that's one of the things that's made the Pats passing game so good this past decade was having a guy like Gronk who can just go up there and get it and almost erase some of your mistakes by just being that good of a tight end and a pass catcher. And Tom Brady didn't have that this year, so like his numbers were going to regress naturally because of the weapons he had or lack thereof. But when you watch the game too, you can understand how his statistical regression happens without the receivers. He doesn't put as much, I guess, oomph behind the ball. The ball does not move as fast out of his hands.
Not a guy who's going to be stretching the field, even though I don't think Tom Brady ever was that quarterback.
Yeah, that was never his forte.
So especially now that he's older, that's really not in his repertoire, to bring out a big word early in the morning.
That's right. Wow, yeah. My brain hasn't even like woken up to the point where I can whip out the word like repertoire.
It's the coffee.
It has to be. But Tom Brady's not that kind of quarterback, and he's not going to become something he's not right now. To me, you stick with what you know. You know at least Ryan Tannehill is going to regress a little bit, but you have a floor of what Ryan Tannehill is and a ceiling, and you can accept whatever's in between there. And for Tom Brady, too, say you do sign Tom Brady. Tom Brady is, like we just mentioned, going to be 43 this year. He's no spring chicken. He could be a little more susceptible to injury. His body can break down. It's destined to at some point because you've been in the league for 20-plus years. You've been in the league longer than... As long as you've been alive. I mean, he's been playing
football.
That's
not a joke. Like,
he's been playing football as long as like some of the youngest guys in the NFL have been alive. It's insane. He's played a ton of football, and eventually you're going to start getting hit again. You're going to start getting tired of it. And here's the thing, too. Say he comes to the Titans, and they go 8-8, and he bounces. Or retires, because when you're going into a season where you're turning 44, now you got to draft a quarterback,
which is very likely, and you don't blame him. Honestly,
I wouldn't have blamed him if he retired after the playoffs this year. And if I was him,
nobody would have blamed him if he retired 2 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody's been saying, "Hey, man, look, you can go out on top.
You can go out on top. I mean, you don't have to try to defeat Father Time like by keep going and going and going. Eventually, Father Time is going to win. Now, Father Time's taken a little longer on Tom Brady than he's taken on almost any other athlete on the planet.
I mean, Tom Brady's gone 10 rounds with Father Time.
Oh yeah, giving him all he can handle.
It's been a good fight, but
it's never a bad thing to go out on top. So." There's that dilemma. That's why, like, if I'm the Titans, I don't even ask Tom Brady if you want to come to Nashville.
You don't even flirt with it.
Maybe flirt with it. Why not?
I would totally go. Age. I would totally go out and just test the market, see where he is.
Because you know what also happens, too? Say you do test the market. Say you do kind of kick the tires.
I think you have to play that card on Tannehill and say, hey, now, you know, you got some competition. You aren't our only guy, Ryan Tannehill.
That's true. But... in terms of a public perception standpoint, say you kick the tires on Tom Brady and it's leaked that Tom Brady wants to play for the Titans, or maybe he actually does tour NBA or something crazy like that. And then you're like, oh, well, I mean, we can get a guy like Ryan Tannehill who is producing better right now.
And they do the right for thing. The next 2 years.
They do the right thing and end up not signing Tom Brady. The public backlash would be turning down a name like Tom Brady. Especially in a market like this, I feel like...
But it gets
like,
people talking about the Titans, and I know this is not the objective of a front office in the NFL.
Right.
But if you want to get people talking about your franchise and actually start to put yourself on the map like the Titans have struggled to do for a multitude of reasons, then you go do something like that because it's bold. And tires are kicked all the time in professional sports. How many tampering cases do we hear across sports?
A ton, especially in the NBA.
Yes.
But... I don't know. Like, I don't even flirt with it because then, like, you have to have the decision of, like, Tom Brady, Ryan Tannehill. That decision should already be made right now. I feel like you do yourself a disservice if that decision isn't made right now. And really, it should tell you what you think of Tannehill if you're willing to take a guy who is visibly regressing at the age of 43, regardless of what he has done in the past, over the quarterback you have right now.
So we want to have a lot of fun on this show, right? If you were listening at 9 o'clock, you heard our open, okay?
We're going to have fun.
We're about some silly things here on Calvin and Campbell, but something happened last weekend that absolutely shook the sports world that we want to hit on really quickly, and that was the passing of Kobe Bryant, his daughter, and all the people on that helicopter. And this is the kind of thing that after the Los Angeles Lakers played last night, their first home game since Kobe Bryant's passing, they had a moving ceremony. ESPN Radio, we were running that last night, went commercial-free for it so you could hear it all. And on Calvin and Campbell here, we just wanted to take a moment to reflect on Kobe Bryant and his legacy and everything that happened in his career as a person, as a player. Because when somebody like this passes away, I mean, I read the push notification on my phone and couldn't believe what I was reading for a second. Mm-hmm. And then you read it, and it doesn't make sense. And you kind of get very confused because Kobe Bryant is something that I've heard for my entire life. And I've just known as a great basketball player and an influential person. And it's something that shakes you and jars you and you can't quite comprehend. And Elijah, I know you grew up as a Lakers fan and that was something mm-hmm. very personal to you.
Oh, yeah. No, it felt like a part of you, especially if you're someone like me who, like, I grew up watching Kobe Bryant. I've been a lifelong Laker fan. I became a Laker fan because Kobe Bryant was my favorite player when I first started watching basketball in the early 2000s. The first basketball I ever remember watching was the final series between the New Jersey Nets and the Los Angeles Lakers. And I fell in love with the way Kobe Bryant played. I fell in love with Shaq. I mean, and then as his career, you know, progressed, he's always been my favorite player. And then I remember, like, certain nights of my life, like the night he scored 81, I remember staying up late and, like, muting my TV so my mom didn't know I was still awake so I could watch ESPN News' live look-in of Kobe Bryant scoring 81. I remember all the championships and how excited I was and all the joy that Kobe Bryant made me feel. So when someone like that passes, it feels like part of you kind of goes too. Like my childhood kind of went away as well. And there's millions of other, well, they're not kids anymore, we're adults, that felt that part of them go away on Sunday. So it felt more surreal. It didn't feel like just someone you didn't know die. It's someone that you had a connection to without ever having to talk to that person. And that is incredibly rare. And that speaks to the legacy he had, the legacy that he built as a basketball player and as an icon and as a figure. I mean, there aren't many athletes who have legacies like Kobe Bryant. Very, very few. I still wear my Kobe Bryant basketball shoes. I still have Kobe Bryant shirts, Lakers shirts. I have a framed Kobe Bryant photo, like, from when I got when I was a kid. And it was hard. It was definitely hard to see that. I didn't believe it was real either. It's like,
I thought this has to be a misreport.
Prank. Yeah.
A misreport.
Prank or just a really bad report. And the minute I saw that ESPN or Adrian Wojnarowski confirmed it, it still didn't even feel real. Like, it wasn't – my thing is it wasn't supposed to be that way. Kobe Bryant was supposed to be like Bill Russell or Shaq or Charles Barkley or guys who get to live long lives. They get second acts as retired athletes or guys who get to be ambassadors for the game. And Kobe Bryant wasn't just an ambassador for basketball once he retired. He was an ambassador for women's basketball. He was pushing the game of women's basketball with his daughter, and it was supposed to be he's retired, he's coaching his daughter. Gigi Bryant becomes a WNBA star, or she goes to UConn with Gino Auriemma and wins national championships, and they progress the game of women's hoops. And he was supposed to be that kind of icon. He's supposed to be like Bill Russell, the old man who's going to NBA Finals games and dapping up the champions and doing all of that and just continuing to push basketball and get to live an excellent post-basketball life. And he just didn't get to do that. It wasn't supposed to be that way. And that's what makes it even more heartbreaking than what it already is.
I just remember back in middle school before we go to break, you know, as a young boy, something you do when you're in class, you know, you wad up a piece of paper,
mm-hmm.
you turn to the trash can, you look at the trash can and say, Kobe. And as a non-basketball player, somebody who wasn't a good basketball player, you inevitably miss every time something Kobe Bryant didn't do. But it's just mm-hmm. part of his legacy is that when you shoot a shot, even if it's not on a court,
yeah.
you say, Kobe Bryant. Now, coming up next here on Calvin and Campbell, we'll get back on track and we will talk about the Houston Texans, the Tennessee Titans, a little bit of the AFC South, and oh man, somebody needs to help the Houston Texans because they can't help themselves. That's coming up next here on Calvin and Campbell on ESPN 102.5 The Game. This is Calvin and Campbell on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm Calvin Smith alongside Elijah Campbell, Captain Kurt on the board with the tunes on a Saturday morning. Thank you so much for tuning in. And man, we did a lot of shows, Elijah, about the Titans. And when they were going on this miraculous run, we got to be part of documenting them getting to the AFC Championship every single week since you took over with me mm-hmm. on this show.
Miraculous run.
In early December. So we got to talk a lot of Titans and a lot of AFC South as the division race heated up and the Titans played the Houston Texans in two of the final 3 weeks of the NFL season. Well, the team who won the Titans division last year, they made an interesting decision.
Yeah, who remembers
this week?
That? No one remembers that the Texans won the division ever since the Titans made that run. Like, that is such an afterthought that I almost forgot it happened until you mentioned it and almost didn't sit right with me.
You forgot the Texans beat the Titans in a pivotal Week 15 game.
In Nashville, too. That seems like ancient history now.
With our perception of the Titans after seeing them do this, it almost seems unfathomable that the Texans were a better team than them over the course of the season. But here we are.
Yeah.
This week, Bill O'Brien was named the general manager of the Houston Texans. Now, they in their own right, Bill O'Brien has led the Texans to the playoffs a couple times. They won a playoff game this very year against the Buffalo Bills.
Buffalo Bills.
For what that's worth.
The Buffalo Bills, yeah.
A solid team this year as well. But Bill O'Brien named your GM, your head coach, a guy who hasn't really led you to much outside of beating an AFC South that has been pretty lackluster at best.
An Andrew Luckless AFC South? At least they have a GM. I mean, like, I know
they didn't have one this year, yeah.
We're going to poo on Bill O'Brien, and rightfully so, but, like, I mean, the bar for Houston Texans GM in the last year has been set pretty low because it's hard to be worse than the last guy because there is no last guy.
Well, that's the thing. Bill O'Brien was basically playing the role of GM mm-hmm. while being the head coach all of this year. So they're like, well, let's just make this one official. How about that?
Yeah, that's pretty much what it felt like.
Here's the list of NFL coaches who also held the title of GM. Okay?
Let it fly.
Bill Parcells.
Good.
Mike Shanahan.
Nice.
Mike Holmgren.
Excellent.
Jimmy Johnson.
Hall of Fame.
Nick Saban.
Not NFL Hall of Fame.
But pretty good coach in his own right.
Pretty good coach in his own right, just at the NFL level.
Paul Brown.
Didn't do so well. Paul Brown. Stadium then, named after him.
Then maybe you've heard of this guy, Vince Lombardi.
Who?
Tom Flores. George Halas. Mm-hmm. Don Shula.
All Hall of Fame.
Bill Walsh. And then you get to this guy.
Oh,
Bill O'Brien. That list fails to mention Bill Belichick. Maybe he doesn't officially have the general manager title. He maybe has something else. I'm
An
not
unseen
sure.
Unseen hand behind there.
But yeah. Bill Belichick makes all the personnel decisions up there. So, Bill O'Brien joining this list of great coaches. Nick Saban, great at Alabama, not in the NFL. That's documented.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way this pays off for the Texans in the long run? Because I have no confidence in Bill O'Brien based off what he's displayed in his lack of ability to be able to protect Deshaun Watson mm-hmm. and maximize a window he has with a pretty good quarterback right now on a cheap rookie contract. He's traded mm-hmm. away all of their draft capital that's valuable to go pay Laremy Tunzel $15, $16 million a year or whatever he's going to pay him. They can't draft an offensive line. Their defense has not been good.
Trade away Jadeveon Clowney.
No J.J. Watt because he's getting older, hurt a lot. The secondary is very, very bad. They traded, second or third round pick for Gerrion Conley?
Yeah.
They go pick up Vernon Hargreaves, Bradley Roby.
It's awful.
That the Houston Texans are not the team who who need to be making Bill O'Brien their general manager, because I think with how the Titans are rising, with how I still believe in Frank Reich and Chris Ballard in Indianapolis,
they're a good quarterback away.
They're a good
weapons.
They're a good quarterback away from contending for a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and that's not an exaggeration. The defense is fine. Their offensive line.
The Texans are on a track to not be a contender in the AFC South quickly.
Yeah. Oh, their window is closing rapidly because of the moves you just mentioned. Because they haven't been able
to
solidify
retool.
A defense, and they're wasting they're wasting a cheap contract that you have with Deshaun Watson, who's one of the better quarterbacks in football right now, who's got a plethora of weapons. You got DeAndre Hopkins, who is a top two or three receiver in football in terms of talent, might be number one. He is a freak athletically. You have Will Fuller, who's one of the best deep threats in the entire sport right now. Kenny Stills. Kenny Stills is your number three receiver, you're doing something pretty good. And Kiki Kuti doesn't sound like a big NFL name right now, but that was Patrick Mahomes' his favorite target at Texas Tech.
And Kiki Kuti, before he started getting hurt like a madman, was a pretty valuable receiver for the role he played for them a couple years ago.
And Daniel Fells really broke out into his own this year, had a pretty solid season. You have, offensively, the personnel that obviously will win you a division, but you don't have the personnel that can keep the Kansas City Chiefs, which, best offense in the NFL, best offense we've seen in a long time, but you can't give up 51 points in three quarters and expect to win any football game. I don't care who you're playing against. And a lot of that was mostly because the Chiefs are the Chiefs, but the Texans' defense were the Texans' defense. And once the Chiefs started catching balls, they moved the ball at will. You've got to be able to solidify some sort of defensive presence to win playoff games in the NFL, or else if they don't do that, they're going to be the same old Texans who make the playoffs by either a wild card or maybe winning a down AFC South. And the only chance you have at winning a playoff game is if you play Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. And as bad as that Josh Allen offense was for the Bills, they still probably should have won that game. Had a lead. Should have won that game. You mentioned you don't know how the Texans can have confidence in making Bill O'Brien a coach or GM and GM. I don't know how any team in the NFL looks at Bill O'Brien and says, yeah, that guy needs to be my coach and my GM. I want this guy having
all the
responsibility.
We've seen the track record of moves he makes, huh?
Yeah.
They're putting their stamp of approval on what he's done.
Yeah. There's no one that's looking at that. No team in the NFL is doing that, because if they did, other teams would be trying to steal him away by now.
All right. Coming up next here on Calvin and Campbell, in our show meetings when we were devising this show with our big head honcho bosses, it came up that Calvin and Campbell kind of sounds like a law firm. Kind of sounds like we're attorneys. So we decided to turn that into a segment, Calvin and Campbell, Attorneys at Law. We will throw up a topic and then put it to the courtroom test. This week, Derrick Henry, should the Tennessee Titans re-sign him? If you know anything about me, you know where I'm going with this. We'll get to that coming up next here on Calvin and Campbell on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's time for Calvin and Campbell, Attorneys at Law, here on Calvin and Campbell on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't forget, we're streaming all around the world on the Game Nashville app. Tap that app, and you can hear this station, this show, whenever you want. So what we're going to do here, we're going to bring a table to the topic every week at 9:30. Calvin and Campbell, Attorneys at Law. Calvin Smith, Elijah Campbell with you. We will state the case, give you the facts, and then make a decision as if we are real judges. So, all rise.
I'm standing.
Court is now in session. All right, the topic this week, Derrick Henry's imminent contract that has to be worked out in some way, shape, or form. Yesterday, Derrick Henry, I guess you could say, made headlines when he said the Zeke contract is the floor for what he wants. Zeke, don't forget, made 6 years and $90 million. Elijah, we're bringing this to the table pretty straight out. Should the Titans pay this man a Zeke-level type of contract? Should they give him even a four-year Le'Veon Bell-type deal? Because this guy was a catalyzing, obviously, driving factor behind the offense for their playoff run.
Oh, he was the reason the offense went. He came and went, as Derrick Henry did. He set up the play action. And when Ryan Tannehill was in play action, that was when he was at his best. You saw it in the Baltimore game when he was able to Derrick Henry's running ability set up that bomb that was thrown to Khalif Raymond, and it opened things up for Ryan Tannehill and made him look better, even in the smaller amount of passing attempts. It made Ryan Tannehill a better quarterback. It's hard to not bring him back. It would be very, very difficult to not bring him back. And if you're John Robinson, you are just praying, hoping and praying that what Derrick Henry said on the Rich Eisen show yesterday was him just kidding and saying it for gigs, you know, just making a funny joke.
For gigs.
Like, please say psych, because you don't, because like, there's obviously a ton of numerical and anecdotal evidence that points against paying running backs. And what your hope is if you do decide to pay him all this money, is that this is different, is that this might be a different scenario, or Derrick Henry is a different, means a different role to this team than David Johnson meant to the Arizona Cardinals, or Le'Veon Bell to the Jets, or even Ezekiel Elliott to the Cowboys.
Would the prosecution please come to the stand? Calvin Smith comes in now, the known hater of running backs.
The number one hater. At times, you have made yourself public enemy number one in Nashville.
Because of my anti-running the football status, hashtag establish the pass, make it trend on Twitter.
Make you a shirt.
I'm going to start off my side of this by saying flat out, you should not pay Derrick Henry. The track record of paying running backs in the NFL does not go well. I don't care how effective Derrick Henry was in several stretches over the last few seasons. But can you really justify paying a guy who's only been a great running back for a year and a half now? At the most injury-prone position that shows the most wear and tear earliest in players' careers around age 27. Guess what? Derrick Henry's 26. Is Derrick Henry the guy who's going to defy every law? Because name me a running back who just ran for years and years and years.
Adrian Peterson did for a while.
But he's not even the same guy anymore.
Well, anymore. I mean, he got drafted in what, 2007?
But Adrian Peterson,
in the league for over a decade.
But Adrian, that doesn't make him an effective running back. Adrian Peterson is the effect of volume carries. That doesn't mean Adrian Peterson's not a good running back, but that's what's keeping him afloat now, is just the volume.
Well, it is now. I mean, still.
Five or 6 years ago, he was still in his 20s.
Yeah, Derrick Henry's still in his 20s.
He's 26. This is when every running
back. He's in his 20s for four more years.
This is when every single running back wears down. Adrian Peterson's out of his 20s, and he's going to wear down. And he did wear down.
Yeah. Well,
that's what happens across the league. And Adrian Peterson, let's say Adrian Peterson even is the guy who did all these great things for a long time. It's one running back. Eddie George broke down. Barry Sanders was out of the league.
I think you're tired. Yeah.
Exactly.
Before he could get to that.
Because running backs wear down. And then, look, you alluded to this. Ezekiel Elliott, 6 years, $90 million.
That's a lot.
What happened with the Cowboys this year?
They threw the ball more.
To throw the ball more.
Yeah.
They didn't make the playoffs. Todd Gurley, Los Angeles Rams. Thank God they signed Todd Gurley. Generational running back. Once-in-a-lifetime kind of talent. The running back to change your offense.
We throw around that term a little too much in the sport. In the
Le'Veon industry. Bell, New York Jets. He sits out a year to rest. Thank God he came to save the Jets.
Well, no one's. Jesus Christ couldn't save the Jets.
I just said Le'Veon Bell. Devontae Freeman. Oh, man. Fourth richest NFL contract to a running back. The Falcons. Oh, man. Devontae Freeman making that offense go.
No smart team does that. No smart person looks at the Falcons offense and says Devontae Freeman's what makes the Falcons offense go, because there's a man named Julio Jones that shares a uniform.
David Johnson. Next richest contract. Oh, man. David Johnson. That Arizona offense with David Johnson has been something to write home about. Saquon Barkley, oh, the Giants. That's an offense you want to go see. Jerick McKinnon hasn't even seen the field. Leonard Fournette, I think we can all say the Jags, not what you're looking for in terms of emulating an offense. Lamar Miller and the Texans.
Didn't even play this year.
Thank God they have Deshaun Watson. Deion Lewis is the next richest contract in the NFL.
Yuck.
Pretty well documented what happens there. Then you get to a really good one in Christian McCaffrey, who's on a rookie deal. And then you go to Mark Ingram, Latavius Murray, James White. Need I continue that running backs who make a lot of money don't ever seem worth it because they break down?
Yeah.
Even if we talk about the Adrian Peterson thing. Is Derrick Henry Adrian Peterson? No. The answer is no. Because for the first few years, Derrick Henry wasn't even a starter.
That's true.
What was Derrick Henry for the first 4 weeks of the season?
Disappearing.
Not the highest paid running back in the NFL by any stretch of the imagination. This is not to come out here and hate on Derrick Henry specifically. This is about the position of running back and the volatile nature of it. Derrick Henry is not the guy who's going to go out and just blaze the trail and be a great running back for the next three seasons. It doesn't happen to the running back position.
Not in today's NFL either.
In any NFL. Given the inefficient nature of running the football, your offense can't afford to function like that. Good offenses run the ball well, but that's dependent on your defense and having an efficient passing game. Everyone talks about the 49ers running the football. They run the football very, very well. I'm not trying to take that away from Shanahan and their core of running backs and their offensive line. They do a great job of that. But they also have absolute killer speed on the outside that can cancel that out and allow you to stretch the field in that way. You have to have that element first and foremost, as well as a good defense, in order to be a good running team, because look at what happens when the Titans don't have the deep passing game evident. That's the first four games of the season with Derrick Henry. It wasn't good.
And a little bit of that was Marcus Mariota.
No, that's the exact point. That's the exact point I'm making, is that running the football becomes dependent on your defense, because if you want to run the football, your defense has to hold somebody down. And then if you want to run the football, that's not a good way of playing comeback. And if your defense falters for a game, if your whole offense is predicated on running the ball, you've lost. Because even though Derrick Henry ran incredibly well in the playoffs, how many offensive points did the Titans score?
Not many. No.
Against the Patriots? 14.
Not many.
How about against the Ravens? The defense did a lot of work there, too.
Oh, you that can't was the get, reason they won those games. Yeah.
It's so hard to get – it's so easy to get caught up in all that – cumulative numbers Derrick Henry piled up, and it was impressive. I'm trying not to take that away from him, how good he was, but don't mistake the team as a whole and the product of the environment that was created that was conducive to Derrick Henry succeeding that the running back position is dependent on. Also, there's a lot of evidence out there that says if your offensive line blocks like the Titans does, a lot of running backs succeed.
A lot.
Especially given the volume Derrick Henry gets, which is a whole big part of the whole Derrick Henry gets better as the game wears on. Well, the offensive line blocks very well for the whole game.
Yeah, which is why signing Jack Conklin is probably more important than re-signing Derrick Henry.
I will say the same thing.
And I think if you can get Derrick Henry to a short-term deal, and maybe if you get him to maybe 1 or 2 years, front-load that money to where you can maybe overpay him this year, but the cap hit for the next year isn't as bad. Because maybe there is a window for Derrick Henry right now.
How much guaranteed money?
Man, personally, the number is low, but for the sake of argument, I'm going to try to talk myself into why the Titans would sign Derrick Henry. Honestly, I would not, because I'm kind of in the same thought where, like, the investment in running back is not worth it. They break down, they become inefficient over, you know, so many years.
The very nature of the position is inefficient.
And the window for running backs in their prime, for the most part, is very, very low because of the beating you take at the position. And no one has carried the ball more times than Derrick Henry at 303 carries this year. I think he might have been the only running back in the league that had more than 30 carries in multiple games.
Just because he's big doesn't mean he's going to defy the odds and stay healthy forever. He already got hurt.
Yeah. I mean, Bo Jackson was big. Bo Jackson had a horrendous injury. It's because your bag won't keep you from getting hurt. My thing is, if there is any team that needs, I wouldn't even say needs, I think a good way to put this, there's any team that won't, I think, absolutely die from paying a running back a lot short term. I mean, obviously, they give him the Zeke contract where it's like, what, 6 years?
Oh, if they give him the Zeke contract, I'm coming on this show and talking for two straight hours about it.
Man. But if you can get Derrick Henry short-term, you can ride what you did, do the same game plan for a lot of what they did at the end of this year when they got hot and didn't have to put the entire pressure of the offense on Ryan Tannehill. They're going to be able to recreate some of what we saw this year. You can't bank on all of it happening because, like we talked during the kickoff, the Titans got pretty lucky at times last year. The Kansas City Chiefs game, a lot had to go right for them to win that game. The Chargers game, even. A lot had to go right for them to win that game, including a fumble at the goal line. in the last 20 seconds. A lot has to go right, had to go right for the Titans to even make the playoffs. But I have a hard time sitting back right now and with this run thinking, do the Titans completely make where they did this year without Derrick Henry? I don't know. I really don't.
But you cannot be sensationalized by that moment because
moments.
I would call this whole season, not the whole season, the stretch they were on, a moment.
Do you think they do that without him, though?
I think there's a good chance. That offensive line was blocking out of their minds.
They were. But does Deion Lewis run for the same amount that Derrick Henry does? Like, it's like, obviously, he probably runs well.
Yes.
But does he run that well?
Probably not. But I don't think you needed to.
I think in the Patriots game you did.
With how well your defense was playing in that game, I think they could go out there and get a stop whenever they wanted, and it would have allowed them to throw the ball more, which I think they would have been able to at least do a little bit. Because as good as the Patriots secondary was last year,
I mean,
the way the Titans threw the ball last season was good enough.
Good enough.
Yeah. Tannehill on his own was good as a quarterback.
He was.
And it's not like
Derrick Henry had a lot to do with that too. I mean, that helped out a whole lot. Some of the throws that Ryan Tannehill made, especially like in the playoffs, he didn't have to throw much, but the throws that he did have to
but
make.
That's the thing about play action is play action just works.
It just works, yeah.
Like having there's been no proven success over time that being better or worse at running the football at any given point is going to increase your play action effectiveness, because that's the whole point of how defenses are trained, is that they're trained to key on the run. When you see that, you bite. It's just ingrained into a defensive player, a linebacker's mindset that's how you play the game. So you can exploit that whether or not you're running the football well.
You can probably exploit that better, though, when the guy that's running the football
marginally
doing it for 6 yards a carry.
Marginally. And when your guy is doing that for 6 yards a carry against the stacked boxes, that has way more to do with the offensive line than your running back.
So then, I mean, they probably go hand in hand. So why wouldn't you want to bring Jack Conklin back and Derrick Henry?
You don't have all the money. Then what do you do with Tannehill?
You'd have to sacrifice on Tannehill.
Oh, then
you would have
to. We saw what this team was without the quarterback. We know what the most important position of this team is.
Exactly. It's incredibly important. Or you have to sacrifice defensively.
And then if you sacrifice defensively, then
that's hard to do. That's really hard to do.
Then you can't run the football. Because if you can't play defense, you can't run the ball.
Right. It's that. I mean, I'm just saying, yeah. I'm just saying if there's any case to which I don't. I sincerely don't think signing Derrick Henry to any amount of large money, anything over maybe $7 or $8 million a year, is worth it.
I think
this team benefited
beyond
a lot
deal.
From the running game than any other team in football, and I think we can agree with that. Like this team benefited from that.
The
a
Ravens
lot.
Were
this
a better
unit,
the Ravens were a better running team than the Titans. Their running backs were Mark Ingram, Gus Edwards,
and Lamar Jackson too.
Yes,
I mean he almost counts as one. But in that game, when it came to turning the ball over, Derrick Henry doesn't fumble a lot either.
He fumbled a couple times last year, though.
I think those are more outliers. It isn't something that he does often.
In the Colts game, oh, man, that had me scared.
That one was scary.
First carry of the game, I thought, oh, God, they're really about to lose in Indy again.
But the Titans executed a game plan, especially offensively, that was geared to beat that Ravens team. You can do that in the regular season several times. Do I want to rely on that? No, obviously not. But this Titans team was able to make that work.
At most, Derrick Henry, one-year deal for me. That has been Calvin Campbell, Attorneys at Law. Hopefully that was at least a little bit of a spirited discussion. I'm sure if you are listening that you may disagree or agree with whatever I said or what Elijah said. Give us a call. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. I'd like to hear from you on that just because I want to get a gauge of Titans fan sentiment. We know it's early in the morning, and that's okay. We'll still take your calls. And coming up next here on The Kickoff, we're going to switch gears a little bit. Go to the University of Tennessee. Do we care about their recruiting rankings? Because I feel like every year people get swept up in the Vols recruiting rankings. But where have we seen it on the field? The coach is probably the most important factor in that equation. We'll get to the Vols and the players they have coming in up next on Calvin and Campbell on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Going to talk a little bit of Rocky Top here on Calvin and Campbell, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm Calvin Smith alongside Elijah Campbell. Just for the record, Elijah had to kind of play the role of paying Derrick Henry in the last segment.
Can't convince myself.
Elijah Campbell is not
Couldn't
team pay Derrick Henry.
I tried my best, folks. I did. I tried so hard.
And I couldn't do it. I hate that I come across like this as well, as this conversation bleeds over into our next segment. But I don't want it to come across as if I hate Derrick Henry or something like that. It has almost nothing to do with Derrick Henry and everything to do with the history of the running back position and the incredibly consistent and strong history of the running back position and the very inefficient nature accompanied by running the football and the dependencies thereof of needing a strong defense enabled in order to be able to execute your game plan.
Yeah, the anecdotal evidence of just the list alone of the highest paid running backs in the league.
I'm happy to read it again.
Should be enough. And then honestly for me, that was enough for me to not want to pay a running back A, long term, and B, more money that would clog up your resources.
So, now getting on to what we put in the grid for the show. The Vols, and every year, I feel like Tennessee has a very good recruiting class. Like, obviously, that was the big thing with the whole Lyle Butch Jones.
The brand
Tennessee
sells itself,
volunteers.
Man. Brand sells itself sometimes.
They were brick by brick. In 2015, they had the fourth highest ranked recruiting class on 24/7 Sports. Kids want to go play for Tennessee, and for good reason, because when Neyland fills up, Neyland is hype.
Not a lot of places can fill up 100,000. I don't think it's 100,000 anymore. But at one point in time, you know, Neyland could fit 104,000. And when that place is packed and it's rocking, the place shakes. And there is not a better place to watch a sporting event than Neyland Stadium. There's just not. So, in my experience, I mean, that's the greatest place to watch a sporting event.
So, over the years, the Vols have had good recruiting classes, but it hasn't translated to much. Especially under Butch Jones.
At all.
Now, this year, they're seventh in the SEC as we approach National Signing Day in just a couple weeks. I guess the second National Signing Day, because now they have the early signing day. Which
just make it one, man. Why are there two? Why? What's the point of there being two? Just take the later date. Give these kids time. Because, like, these kids that eventually sign, like the Joe Moorhead thing. I don't want to go off on a tangent too much. Like, coaches still get canned between the first signing day and the second signing day. Oh, it's just dumb. You're setting yourself up for a lot of that.
So, the Vols, as we got to do this segment quick, the Vols, do you care about their recruiting ranks at all? Because this year, they're 7th in the SEC, 14th in the country. They have someone who's being hailed as the savior in Harrison Bailey. And I hate it for the kid, because he's, what, 18 years old?
It's a lot of pressure.
Comes in with all the pressure of an entire program who's desperate for a star at that position.
Yeah.
Someone who isn't Brian Maurer or Jarrett Garantano.
Someone who has the promise of playing in a league that Harrison Bailey played at in Georgia and in one game threw for, like, what, 400 yards in the first half?
Set records all across the state of Georgia.
Yeah, rewrote the record book and played in a part of the country that is just littered with talent, with SEC talent. There's a lot, some high hopes for this kid, too, and he's put in a weird spot right now with Garantano coming back. But when you ask if I care about the recruiting class rankings, no, for a couple reasons. One, it's been proven that it doesn't matter, that you could be Butch Jones and have the number four recruiting class in the country, but if you don't beat South Carolina and Vanderbilt, it doesn't matter that you beat Florida or Georgia.
That's the wildest season
and
ever.
That's the wildest season ever. How do you do that? Well, you do that because you're not a great coach, and if you can have all the talent in the world, but you can't coach your way out of a paper bag, you're not going to coach your way out of the SEC East, especially when you're in a conference in a division that you just said – Tennessee's the 14th ranked recruiting class in the country, but they're not even top six in their own conference. How do you expect to win in that conference?
The SEC,
if you can't
get players in the SEC.
Yeah. So that's another thing. That's another point I was going to make, that if they're still seventh in the SEC, that means you're still going 8-4, 7-5 with the number 14 recruiting class. And yes, the Clemsons, the Alabamas, the Georgias, the LSUs, they all have great recruits. What they also have are great coaches. Ed Orgeron has proven. At the right place, he has become a great head coach. Dabo Swinney, two national championships, great head coach. Nick Saban, a plethora of national championships.
Maybe the best ever.
Maybe the best ever. Amazing head coach. There is no better than Nick Saban. Kirby Smart is a pretty good head coach. I wouldn't even say great. I'd say great at times. I mean, he's just you're in the SEC, man. Like, sometimes that's all that happens.
Along those lines, the Vols in 2015 were fourth, right?
Right.
Well, this is what you're going up against here, even if your recruiting rankings are what you need to turn around a program on their own, which obviously we all know that's not the case. But
right.
Like 2017, Alabama number one, Georgia number three. Then you jump to 2018. Georgia number one, Alabama number five. Then 2019, Alabama one, Georgia two. And then for the upcoming class of 2020 right now, Georgia number one, Alabama number two. Every yeah. single year, the top schools in the SEC are up in the top five. If mm-hmm. you want to compete with them, you got to be at that level, and you got to coach with them. As things can look positive for the Vols, but they are still fighting an uphill battle.
Yeah, exactly, which is why like 14 in the country does not wow me. You know, being and then you have the context of being only
Harrison
seventh.
Bailey better be Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, and that's what you're banking on, which is really unfair.
Which sucks for an 18-year-old kid to have to come into that situation as a true freshman, early enrollee.
Especially when he is not working with as much talent as other people, other teams
close.
In that conference. Now, maybe if you put him on the team last year where you're throwing to Marcus Callaway and Juwan Jennings and the offense had some weapons, which it's still frustrating that Tennessee wasted a year with those guys on the perimeter and only going 7-5 and only beating two teams with winning records. Frustrating. Very frustrating. You're asking him to turn around that ship that, I mean, without those guys, it's going to be hard. The offense is going to be rebuilding a little bit. The offensive line will be great, but you still need weapons. You're still going to need weapons to succeed in the SEC because everybody has them. Defensively, everybody has the best corners, the best defenses. You're not playing Georgia State every week where you can afford to maybe lose a game, but you're going to beat everybody else. Can't slip up in the SEC.
All right, coming up next year on Calvin and Campbell, we'll get to the segment we want to do at 10 o'clock every day. We mostly made this segment because we have a very funny drop for it. Christopher Russo soundbite, say something. That's coming up next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.